A brief history of the Holy Roman Empire. Henry II of Bavaria and the new political situation. Now, the Byzantine Empire had long held on the part of southern Italy, even after Otto II claimed much of that land as a dowry. Over the years, Constantinople had not given up hope of regaining Rome, but the invasions from the Arabs and most recently the Bulgars had prevented them from seriously governing their western realms, let alone annexing Rome. As a result of the prolonged Bulgar War, the southern Italians themselves, tiring of Saracen raids, as well as a lack of interest and help from the east, were now growing restless of their eastern rulers. Not long after Benedict had shown strength in defeating the Muslims, Melus of Bari revolted against the Byzantines. The political situation had changed. The old Crescenti family despised the Germans and longed to return to the Byzantine Eastern Roman Empire. The new Tusculan family, however, were smart politicians, if not good people. They knew that the strength of the empire lay in the west and in Henry II. They sought to strengthen the west rather than the east. Benedict had further invigorated the church alliance with the Normans and increased their power and authority in their empire. The Normans, in return, lent troops to him, and he, in return, slyly rendered aid and assistance to the rebellion, including the lending of Norman troops to Melus. The rise of Norman power certainly was not Benedict's doing, however. In recent years, France had lost any real power over the region, and the new Norman dukes were themselves becoming powerful rulers, the most famous of whom, William the Conqueror, would rise to dominance less than a half century later. For now, however, the Normans were still a relatively small country, and their troops were unable to defeat the Byzantine army that had arrived in 1019. Even though Benedict had not openly participated in the rebellion, it was obvious what role he played in it, and the Byzantines promptly moved north. Benedict VIII now went to visit Germany and seek Henry's help. He arrived as if he were simply there to show his respect for Henry and the German people, but after his welcome and customary exchanges, he asked Henry's help in Italy. Henry agreed. In 1021, Henry advanced against southern Italy and scored a few victories over the Byzantines, but he was unable to secure many of the lands. A truce was enacted that would draw the boundary lines similar to where they had been previously. It was a draw. Neither side made any significant advances, nor had they lost much. The Holy Roman Empire and the Byzantine Empire continued in their always uneasy alliance. And we have the incident in Orléans of the 14 martyrs. It was late in the reign of Henry's reign that a seemingly obscure travesty in France occurred. This tragic event often goes unnoticed in history books because it has no connection with the empire as a whole, but it did plant a seed which, when it went unpunished, would later grow into the Inquisition. This tragedy was the public execution and martyrdom of 14 heretics in Orléans, France, in 1022. This was the first such trial in the Middle Ages and set the stage for many more in future generations. Over the past 1,000 years, Christians had suffered persecution and martyrdom. Almost without exception, however, these Christians died at the hands of pagans, the Vikings, the Saxons, the Magyars, the Bulgars, the Huns, the Parthians, and more recently, the Muslims. To be sure, popes had excommunicated and banished alleged heretics in occasional riots and confrontations between the early Arians and the Trinitarians had resulted in death, but since the rise of Charlemagne, heresy was not a state crime punishable by death. It is ironic that the French, who had so greatly blasted the tyranny of the papacy, were the clergymen responsible for this forerunner of the Inquisition. Stranger still is the fact that these Christians didn't seem to preach any heresy. Not preached by some dissident Catholic clergy members. Specifically, the issues concern the legitimacy of infant baptism and the doctrine of transubstantiation. This later doctrine refers to the belief that the bread and wine of the Eucharist are literally transformed into the physical body and blood of Christ. The Eucharist then became viewed as a second sacrifice from which believers could gain remission of sins. That these men were condemned for their opposition to transubstantiation is even more astonishing, since the doctrine of transubstantiation had not yet been formally adopted by the Catholic Church itself. Indeed, it would be another 200 years before the Church would officially adopt the position. Nevertheless, 1022, King Robert II, had been warned of the dangerous teachings of many laymen, including several nobles. The fact that these were laymen rather than clergy members may have contributed to their persecution, for although the French clergy opposed interference by the papacy, the French clergy, too, had been corrupted by power. The notion that mere laymen were qualified to attack the doctrines and the teachings of their bishops threatened their very power. Hence, when Robert II convened a council, the heretics were condemned to death by fire if they refused to recant. This was done, and the 14 were burned alive at the stakes before King Robert II. A final note upon the martyrs is prudent. Because accounts of their martyrdom come only from their enemies, it's hard to determine exactly who the 14 were. They have been identified by the Catholics as Albigensians, but this term is way too vague, particularly at this particular time period. The term lumped together various sects which range from the latter Waldensians to various Cathar sects. Some Protestant historians have erroneously identified these groups as forerunners of the Reformation, but this is only partially true. The later Waldensians may indeed be considered true proto-Protestants. That the Albigensians, similar Cathar sects, taught a breed of dualism that reeked of cultic doctrine, which barely had no resemblance to Protestantism or Catholicism. Like the Paulican sect of the East, some of these sects taught that they were two sons of God, the one Christ and the other Satan, his brother. They rejected the Old Testament as having been written by an evil brother, and also preached celibacy for all. Finally, they believed that a Christian who sinned after gaining redemption was instantly lost and could never be brought back to repentance. The problem is compounded by the Catholics' failure to distinguish between these various sects. If these martyrs were early Waldensians, then they were doubtless true believers burned for threatening the power of the clergy. If, however, they are to be associated with later Albigensians, well, they were probably an obscure cultic sect. This is possible, as the martyrs were also accused of preaching against marriage and declaring that absolution was not possible for new sins, although some suggest this is merely an allusion to the sacrifice of Mass. In either case, their death would establish a terrible precedent that gave the state the right to determine orthodoxy under the pain of death. And that's why you end up with an Inquisition. And of course, Henry II is, and it just happens during his time period. Now the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987-1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.